Well, let's turn to the book of Nehemiah. 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah. Our series at the moment is The Man Behind the Wall. And we have been following Nehemiah, leaving the palace in Persia, in Shushan, and having that burden to go and repair the walls and the gates of Jerusalem. The last 2 weeks we've been going round the gates of ancient Jerusalem and saw the list of names of those involved in this building project. John Blanchard said, "Christian service is not meant to be a duty burdening the mind, but is meant to be rather a fire burning in the heart." And that's the way it should be. Service is the overflow of our devotion toward God. And there is a lot of material. I want to pick out just four verses this morning from this chapter, because we have gone through it looking at the gates. First of all, look at verse 10. "And next unto them repaired Jediah, the son of Harumaph, even over against his house. And next to him repaired Hattush, the son of Hasabaniah." And then down to verse 23. "And after him repaired Benjamin and Hashab over against their house. After him repaired Azariah, the son of Maaseiah, the son of Hananiah, by his house." Verse 29. "After them repaired Zadok, the son of Immer, over against his house. And him repaired also Shemaiah, the son of Shechaniah, the keeper of the east gate." And then verse 30. "After him repaired Hananiah, the son of Shelemiah, and Hanan, the sixth son of Zaloph, another piece. After him repaired Meshulam, the son of Berechiah, over against his chamber." Now, it'll make sense after a while whenever you see the link. But keep your Bible handy, because what I want to do very briefly by way of introduction is highlight a few things that we're not really dealing with in the passage, but they're in there and I want to touch on them just by way of introduction. Notice first of all the selection of the workers. And if you have been reading through this chapter, you will notice the range of workers. For example, verse 1 and verse 22, we read about the priests. In verse number 8, we read about the goldsmiths. In verse number 8, we read about the chemists or the apothecaries. Verse 9 and 12 and 14 to 17, you read about the rulers. And then you read about the Levites in verse 17, and you read about the Nethinims, who were the temple servants. You read about them in verse 31, and in verse 31 and 32, you read about the merchants. And so as you go through this chapter and you're taking notes, you discover that there's lots of different workers from lots of different walks of life, and every strata in society, and all had their role and their part to play. And so we discover that there is a place for you if you're a Christian. There's a place for you to fulfill in the work of God. You fit in somewhere. You're a part of the plan. You're a part of the jigsaw. And there's part of you that's needed in the work of God. And we learn that from Nehemiah chapter 3. And we discover in Nehemiah chapter 3 that God has a record of all those that are involved in his business. He knows their name. He knows their position. He knows what they did for him. And so that's a great encouragement, because there's people working in this fellowship behind the scenes. They're not seen in the pulpit, and they're working away, and God knows. We learn that from Nehemiah chapter 3. Notice in verse 12 that the woman, the ladies were involved. You read of he and his daughters. And we touched on that some weeks ago. Don't let anybody tell you that there's no work for the ladies. There they are building the walls. In this age of equality and feminism and the push for women's liberation, it must be repeated that men are not superior. It needs to be repeated that the men are not more gifted. Men and women are equal in the sight of God, but they are not the same. They're not the same. In some areas, women are miles ahead of the men and far more superior. And in other areas, men have the edge. And saying women and men are equal is like saying apples and oranges are equal. They're both very nice, but they're not the same. Both might be sweet, but they're not the same. And so our roles are different, and we complement each other, but there is no superiority between the sexes. So there's the selection of workers, and we could have spent much more time in that. Notice, secondly, by way of introduction, the passion of the workers. We notice in verse 20 that Baruch earnestly repaired. And there was that passion about his work in verse number 20. He earnestly repaired the other piece. He had an enthusiasm and a passion for the work of God that was evident to all. Boy, we love to meet people like that, don't we? Who are so passionate, and they're just all into it. And nothing's too much bother because they are passionate about the work of God. Notice verse 4. And we read about Meremoth, the son of Urijah, the son of Kos. So he was repairing. And then when you drop your eye to verse 21, after him repaired Meremoth, the son of Urijah, the son of Kos, another piece from the door of the house of Eliashib, even unto the end of the house of Eliashib. So here's this man Meremoth, when he finished his allocated section, when he finished his bit of the wall, he didn't down tools and go home and say, well, that's me finished. No, Meremoth was walking round the walls trying to find someone who needed help, someone who needed another part done, and here we find him later on in the same chapter. He's finished his own, so he goes and does some more. The passion of the workers. I don't know if you know the name Eugene Ormandy. He was a conductor and violinist, particularly with the Philharmonic Orchestra. He died in 1985, but he was famous for conducting and his violin playing. But one incident in his life stands out about Eugene. He was conducting one day, and he put so much into it, he dislocated his shoulder while he was conducting the orchestra, and he kept on going with a dislocated shoulder. Such was his passion and his interest in music. The passion of the workers. And we find it in Baruch and we find it in Meremoth. They worked earnestly, and they, when they finished their own, they found another bit to do and they kept it going. So the selection of the workers, the passion of the workers, we have to deal with the dereliction of the workers. We noticed in verse 5 as we were going through that the Tekoites worked, but their nobles did not get involved. Their nobles didn't bother. They felt it was maybe too dirty work or too busy. Or we'll work in an advisory capacity, and we'll just come now and again and inspect, but we don't really want to get involved. That was the nobles of the Tekoites. But also look at verse 30. Notice in the way past, after halfway down verse 30, and after him repaired Meshulam. After him repaired Hananiah, the son of Shelemiah, and Hanan, the sixth son of Zaloph. And I stopped there and thought, the sixth son, where did the other five sons go? Huh? We don't read of them. Here's a family, and the youngest son is out doing the work, and the other five are not there. But the sixth son is there. I wonder where the other five were. They're conspicuous by their absence. They weren't involved, not active, the youngest doing the work. So if the selection of the workers, the passion of the workers, the dereliction of the workers, finally in this wee introduction, the vision of the workers. Look at verse number 2. It says, and next on him builded the men of Jericho. Did you notice that? The men of Jericho, that was 16 miles away. They would not benefit from the strong walls and the repaired gates. It wasn't their problem. They wouldn't get the benefit. In fact, if an enemy attacked and saw the walls in Jerusalem, they might go and attack Jericho instead. It could make them more vulnerable. Look at verse 7 of the chapter. And unto them repaired Melatiah the Gibeonite, and Jadon the Meronothite, the men of Gibeon and of Mizpah. These were men from other towns and other villages. The men of Gibeon, that was 12 miles away from Jerusalem. They wouldn't benefit from the strength and protection of Jerusalem's walls. But they caught the vision, and they went along to help the men and the women and the workers in Jerusalem. They said, we'll leave our work, we'll leave our towns, and we'll come and we'll finish the work. The vision of the workers. I'm going to leave that all aside because I want to pick out these four verses that I read. Because in each of them, there's a little phrase, over against his house. Did you notice that? Over against his house. And then the last one, over against his chamber. And those four verses, we've discovered these people who lived against the city wall, and whenever the wall crumbled, their house crumbled too. It's one of the dangers of living too close to the world outside, because whenever things start to go wrong, it affects where you live. And of course, spiritually, there's always a danger when you live too close to the world outside. Let's look at these four together in the time that we have. Verse 10, first of all. And next unto them repaired Jediah, the son of Haru Amoth, even over against his house. Jediah means invoker of God. It means one who calls upon God. That's what Jediah means. And we judge by his name that Jediah knew the holy discipline of prayer. He was a man of prayer. And we need people like Jediah. We need people who take prayer seriously. We need people who have an intimacy with God and delight in communicating with him. Prayer, of course, is an honor and a privilege for the child of God. Prayer is how God intervenes on planet Earth. Prayer is how we impact our spouse, how we impact our family, how we impact our world. We're coming up to another time of more elections. We need to be praying. We need to be praying internationally because this world is a mess. We need to be praying nationally for our country, and we need to be praying locally. We live in days of change, and we need Jediahs who will be invokers of God. But notice, Jediah's house has crumbled. Jediah's house needs repair, and it could be that there's a Jediah here this morning and the prayer life has crumbled. And whenever a preacher starts to talk about prayer, you have mass conviction, because I have not met a Christian yet who would want to pray more, who would like to be more devoted and more focused in their prayer life. I haven't met one yet. It seems as if there's always something to pull us to one side or another. And it's where Satan loves to attack, to rob us of an intimacy and a power with Almighty God. And so we have Jediah, the invoker of God, And he starts to put the house in order. It speaks of a renewed communication with God. And if you get nothing else from our meeting this morning, if I am able to instill in you a desire to take prayer seriously, I will have more than done my job. I don't understand it. Keep going on about it. Makes no difference. But oh, to be an invoker of God. The next time we find that little phrase is verse 23. And we find it's the house of Benjamin and Hashub over against their house. And I stopped there and I thought, well, what's the significance? If Jediah was building his house up against the wall and his name was invoker of God, what does Benjamin mean? Well, Benjamin means son of my right hand. You'll remember the story way back in Genesis 35, and Rachel dies in childbirth at Bethlehem. She had a difficult, tragic birth. And as the baby is born, she names her son Benoni, which means son of my sorrow. But then Jacob renamed him Benjamin, son of my right hand. And away back in Deuteronomy 33, when Moses is giving his farewell speech to the nation, let me read one verse. Verse 12 of Deuteronomy 33. And of Benjamin he said, the beloved of the Lord shall dwell in safety by him, and the Lord shall cover him all the day long, and he will dwell between his shoulders. Benjamin was given the promise of the protection of God. Man, that's wonderful, isn't it? Imagine having that promise. The protection of... Can I remind you, we do have that promise. Everything we go through in life, every crisis, every problem, every obstacle, every disappointment, every crisis, God knows all about it, and he puts his sheltering arms around us. It was Donald Barnhouse, the great preacher, who said, we do believe in eternal security, but we do not believe in eternal presumption. I like that. I do believe with all my heart in eternal security, but never let it become eternal presumption, where you take it for granted. And in Nehemiah chapter 3, Benjamin has let things crumble. His dwelling is in a state of disrepair, and things need to be put back in order. Dear Christian, this morning, have you built your house too near the outside wall, too near the world? Do you need it repaired this morning? The invoker of God, Jediah, do you need that renewed communication with God? A new prayer life, a new impetus to your prayer life? Is there a Benjamin here? And things have come into your life and to a point where you wonder if you're saved at all, because things are starting to crumble. A worldliness causes things to crumble. Division causes things to crumble. Busyness about other things causes your spiritual life to crumble. Many things attract the chastening hand of God. I say to you, don't take his protection for granted and become complacent. So we've been through two of them. Jediah, the invoker of God, he put his house in order. It speaks of a renewed communion and communication with God. And then Benjamin, the son of my right hand, it speaks of a renewed protection in God and knowing his security and safety. Verse 29 is the next one. After them repaired Zadok, the son of Immer, over against his house. Zadok means upright and just. Holy. I'd love to have met Zadok. Upright before God. Holiness ought to be our driving goal and our driving ambition. Holiness should be our daily occupation to attract the smile and the well done of God. How we treat our spouse at home, how we act and work, what we watch on the television or computer, all damage holiness. We are set apart from this world for God, and Zadok's house is crumbling, and it must be repaired. Is that how it is for you and me this morning? Holiness seems extreme. It seems unobtainable. It seems for the elite. It seems for certain people, but I never could attain it. My life as far as holiness crumbled long ago, Pastor. Zadok repaired his house. It speaks of a renewed devotion before God. Notice in verse 29, Zadok was the son of Immer. You know what I noticed? Immer means talkative. Oh, the untold damage that the tongue does. The damage it does to the work of God. Oh, the homes that have been damaged and crumbled because of gossip and slander. Repair the house. Put the bricks of holiness in place. The fourth one is verse 30. At the end of the verse, Meshullam, the son of Berechiah, over against his chamber. Meshullam didn't have a house. He just had a room. Now, we don't know why he just had a room. It could be that was all he could get, because Jerusalem was the capital. Everybody wanted to live in Jerusalem. It put the house prices up. If you wanted to live in London, or you wanted to live in Dublin or Edinburgh, some of these key cities, Paris maybe, you pay a premium because there's such a high population and they're all looking houses and it pushes the houses up. But if you live somewhere out in the country, well, not everybody will be attracted to live in the country. They have to commute and all the rest of it, and the prices come down. And maybe Meshullam did not have a house because he couldn't afford it. He couldn't afford a house. All he had was a room. Or maybe I'm chastised because maybe it was that he chose to live a sacrificial kind of life, and a room was all he needed. Maybe he didn't have a wife, didn't have a family, and so a room was all that he required. But he had his chamber. It was nothing to boast about. Nothing to write home about. Nobody would be very impressed with it. It was just a chamber. But Meshullam starts to repair his room. It speaks, I think, of a renewed reflection upon God. His focus was on other things and not on his home down here. And so we have these four little verses here in this chapter, along with many other things that just seem to jump out of the chapter. Jediah, the invoker of God, he repaired his house. It speaks of a renewed communion with God. Oh, that we might be Jediah's this morning. And then we find Benjamin, the son of my right hand. It speaks about protection. He had known and promised the protection of God. He repairs his house. It speaks of a renewed protection in God, reminding us through all the ups and downs of life that God will be there. He'll never leave us nor forsake us. Zadok, just and upright, he repaired his house. It speaks of a renewed devotion before God. Dear saint of God, we need to live holy life. This world is looking to see if we're genuine or not. And they will know that by how we live. And if we claim one thing but live the same as they do, and we enjoy what they do, and it's just a whole entertainment, they will say, well, what you believe and what you live are two opposite ends. You can't be genuine. So God calls us to live out our faith, to give our faith legs, to live out in a holy life. That's Zadok, a renewed devotion before God. And then Meshulam, over against his chamber, just a room, and it spoke of a renewed reflection upon God. He renewed his focus. Let me finish with this thought. If only some repaired their section of the wall and others didn't bother, it leaves all the city vulnerable, doesn't it? You see, you could have 99% of the wall built and the gates in order, but if that little 1% is still in ruins, that's where the enemy will attack. And everyone else is vulnerable because of that wee bit of weakness, because of that 1% that didn't bother to rebuild the walls, and that's where the enemy gets in. And so every one of you could repair your bit of the wall. But if I don't repair my wee bit, then the enemy gets in through me. Or if you don't repair your wee bit and say, how does my life need to change in the light of God's word? How do I need to amend what I do and my schedule and my diary? How do I need to change things to make sure that all is order with my part of the wall? If you don't bother, the enemy could get in through you. If Meshulam did not repair his little room, the enemy would find the weak spot. And God records how Meshulam restored even his little room. Will you repair your section? Maybe for you, it's the communion with God, the Jediah part of the wall. Maybe for you, it's the Benjamin, the protection in God, and reminding yourself again that no matter what I do, no matter where I go, the Lord will be there to put his sheltering arms around me. Maybe for you, it's Zadok. My, there needs to be a holiness, a separatedness from this world. Or maybe for you, it's Meshulam. Just a wee room. Maybe you're sitting here and you think, well, I'm not significant, Pastor. I don't make any difference. Nobody notices me. Well, here's Meshulam, listed in Nehemiah 3, just a wee room, a chamber, but it needed to be repaired. It spoke of a renewed reflection and focus upon the things of God. Next week, God willing, we'll get into chapter 4. God bless.